Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, Lions went down to Indianapolis this past Sunday and came away with a 24-6 win over the Colts, thus sweeping the AFC South portion of their schedule. It's, you know, score-wise, a dominant win. It's a dominant win when you watch the game, but not as clean as the dominant wins we saw against the Titans and the Jaguars, but fine nonetheless. Our expectations are getting too high.
I know, certainly. There were many people that came up to me and said, I was a little bored or I was a little disappointed. And I'm like, they won by 18. They didn't allow any points to be scored in the second half, which is something they did against all AFC South teams. Mm-hmm. No AFC South team scored against the Lions in the second half in all four games. And I don't want to get to the point where we're too spoiled that an 18-point win just becomes this kind of like, eh, they could have, you know, we're getting a little high on our horse. I don't want us to get too high as a fan base. That being said, we're going to kill the Bears this week. So, spoiler.
We'll see.
No, I'm just it's going to be fun. I mean, this is going to be a fun game. That game might have been, like you said, they'd blown people out leading up to that game. And so to go into that game and just score three touchdowns, kick a field goal, and just call it a day and get out of town, it was just business. You know, they're just getting business done. But with this game, division rival, Thanksgiving, this has got a lot of hype around it. I expect this game to be much more entertaining.
Lions have lost six straight on Thanksgiving. Why am I not chambered?
I think it's seven
in a row.
Yeah, 2016 was the last one. The Bears, three of those wins. Have three wins in that same time frame on Thanksgiving because they beat the Lions. So, yeah, the Lions are due, certainly. Bears, I mean, it makes sense, I guess. They've played the Bears. This will be the fourth time in 8 years that they played the Bears. And it's another one of those, I don't know, what do you want to, are we calling them curses? Or are we just call
no,
them,
this
like,
is revenge games.
Revenge games. Okay.
I don't know. I get like breaking the curse. And it's them losing seven Thanksgiving games in a row is not a curse.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever that's worth.
It's a poor streak, right? We've seen them break the Seattle streak, break the Titans streak, break the, you know, beat Dallas. Like a lot of those are ending, right? The Cleet Blakeman streak. So
there's only one person thinking about that streak.
And so this one's due. This is a big one. And boy, is Dan Campbell downplaying it. Very much focusing on this is a division game and that's what's important. Pointing out that the Lions are at more of a disadvantage than the Bears because the Lions have all of their family around them and they're going to have to make their family wait and they're going to have to make concessions for their families. And so there's a lot more for them to take care of. And it's a short week with all that extra pressure.
Why they've lost seven in a row on Thanksgiving.
Right? And then he just keeps going back to, well, you don't want to be in a bad mood. So it's probably important to win because you're gonna be around family for a couple of days, so you want to be in a good mood. So you like to get the win for that and keep. But the focus is really on this is a division game. We need to win the division game because he said before division games basically are like double, right? So, but yeah, he has been very hesitant to address that they haven't won in a long time. He's brushed by it, but he hasn't really taking that question head on.
All right. We'll be talking about that game in just a couple of minutes here. Let's dig into the transactions first from over the weekend. Ennis Rakestraw was sent to IR. Emmanuel Mosley removed from IR. And Mosley, he was active for the game on Sunday, right?
Yeah, he played only special teams, but he got one of the first tackles, special teams tackles, one of the first few in the game, and took a good angle on a pursuit, and I'm happy for him. You know, he's getting his feet wet. They're not pushing him too hard to get back on the field on defense, but they feel like he's fully clear now, and so I think they're willing to start introducing him on defense more this week. Will it be on the outside? Will it be get some slot opportunities? I think there's a lot of opportunities that we'll get into as we go.
The big news, I think this was today, right? Edge
Yes.
defender James Houston was released.
Yeah, a bit unusual to have that happen today. You know, it's very possible they're looking at their injuries, or they're looking at, you know, their lineup, who they want to promote or elevate, and they want that extra roster spot in order to get that done. And they looked at it and said, well, James is the low man on the totem pole, and so he's the guy that we're going to move on from. But at the same time, to do it on a Tuesday is a little bit harsh. It's very possible he found out on a Monday. Or he found out Monday. The rest of us didn't find out till Tuesday. But again, it's timing's a little bit unusual. At the same time, my guess is they're doing it now to give him, you know, the time to clear waivers and take a look at some new teams, and they're ready to part ways. His role had been declining for a while. Their game a couple weeks ago against, I think it was might have been the Jacksonville game, that I think we talked about the fact that their right tackle was really bad against speed rushers, and he really couldn't do much. He had like one play, I think, that he showed up on, and that was a guy who was notoriously bad for against James Houston types, and James couldn't get it done. And we'll see. I do think his inability to develop into the Sam was a big problem for him. He's been open about the fact that it's very hard on him mentally to not achieve those goals that he wants, and he has a hard time dealing with that, and that's completely understandable. But when you are struggling with what you're doing, and you're not reaching your goals, and you kind of feel stuck, it's got to be frustrating for him as a player. And so, like, you know, Dan Campbell even said it today, sometimes a change of scenery will help. So hopefully he lands somewhere and has some good success. But unfortunately, it seemed inevitable that it was headed this way. A tick surprising, it happens before Thanksgiving instead of after the season.
You know, that rookie year, he had that move. You know, he's so fast and just
Yeah.
running around offense, and he never was able to build off of that, which is too bad. And, but he did break his ankle and everything, and I don't know
Yeah.
if that sapped a little bit of his speed, and
I do
you
think
know.
it did.
So I
Yeah.
mean, like he'll go somewhere else because somebody else should definitely take a crack at him because of the production he put out as a rookie. But
Yeah.
maybe this is the last we see of James Hughes. Maybe this is very waning. It's not like we're Brandon Powell is out there returning kicks for the Vikings or
Right.
you know, any one of a number of Kyle Van Noy, you know,
Right.
like with the Ravens having a great career. Maybe it is, and we'll see.
You know, I think I agree with you. I think he'll get a shot. But from the Lions standpoint, you know, they had Muhammad inactive the last 2 weeks, and I think he's a guy that stylistically fits the what they're looking for more. And I do think they were giving James a shot, and he just never got there, unfortunately.
Well, there's a coach out there that's going to say, I can fix him. So
Oh,
we'll see who that is.
certainly.
All right. Injured. Walkthroughs on Monday and Tuesday. So we're just extrapolating the injuries here. Running back, David Montgomery, shoulder. Did not practice Monday, limited Tuesday.
Yeah, he's gonna play. This is his former team. Dan Campbell laughed about the fact that he knows he's not gonna be able to keep him off the field. Montgomery said as much in the locker room that he's, you know, he's going to play. He's been saying that. Taking it easy with him, he should be good to go. And it'll be very interesting to see the bet lines on him, because I feel like a lot of people are going to be laying money down on Montgomery to have a good game, regardless of injury.
Yeah, well, all right, and I guess we'll dig into this later, but like, I don't know, Montgomery, he might not have a big game just because of the way things work between him and Gibbs, and not because he's bad or anything. It's just the situation back and forth, you know, like whose drives which.
No, I agree with you.
Wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown knee injury, did not practice Monday, limited on Tuesday.
So he played all but like two snaps on Sunday. So he actually didn't like check out of the game like Montgomery did. For him to show up on Monday, it was a bit of a surprise. He's back limited. He's telling people in the locker room too that he's good to go. He'll be fine. Dan Campbell said as much as well. He expects Saint to be able to go. And so, you know, they'll have another practice tomorrow. No media access, so we don't get to you know, check in anymore with the team until the game. But I'm expecting him to, you know, get in, whether it's limited or full, and then he'll probably get a questionable label. But I fully expect him to play as well.
Wide receiver Khalif Raymond, foot injury, did not practice Monday or Tuesday.
So this one's the tricky one, right? Because they are concerned about it long term, but the initial diagnosis they got was positive. At the same time, they are not sure, you know, if they can fully trust that first diagnosis. So they want to get a second diagnosis, and they're in the process of getting that now, because you know, you don't want to get a positive diagnosis and then put the guy out there if he's not ready. And so they're just double checking to make sure that they're doing right by Khalif, and they want him, you know, if they want to see if he can maybe come back. They are leaving the door open as it potentially being like a season ending injury. At the same time, they're optimistic based on their first evaluation that he'll be able to return at some point. They have not talked about IR with him yet. Again, it all kind of, what happens next is all predicated on a second doctor's appointment.
Left tackle Taylor Decker knee injury, did not practice Monday or Tuesday.
So this one's weird because he leaves the game with the injury, then he comes back in and he plays, and then they pull him out at the end because they're up 18 points and, you know, with just a few minutes left. And he tells everybody in the locker room he's fine and he's expected to be able to go. He feels confident he'll be able to go and play on Thursday. And then Dan Campbell shows up and he's like, no, we're not happy with where he's at. And then on Tuesday, he's saying nothing's changed. We're still not happy. We're concerned Decker might not be able to play. And so it's very different from what the actions of Sunday and what Decker was saying in the locker room versus the tone that Campbell has had the first 2 days. And again, we don't get Campbell tomorrow, and we won't know on practice. If he gets a questionable label, you know, that's the best you can hope for at this point. But based on the tone of Campbell, it sounds like he's not going to play, which is pretty disappointing, because with it being a short week, you're going to go back to that same formation you had against Houston, which is you're going to have to play Dan Skipper at left. And you're keeping Panay at right, which is a combination I'm fine with. But we'll get into why I like it a little bit later. But I, you know, even if they wanted to make the switch to move him to left tackle, they're just running walkthroughs on a short week. They couldn't install anything, so they're not going to change him. So if Decker is out, it's going to be Skipper at left tackle, almost certain. And I think that might be the biggest injury problem that they have, in this game
to face for Thursday.
Yeah. All right.
Back to Khalif Raymond for a second. It's not Khalif Raymond. Who's going to return punts on Thursday? Is it still going to be St. Brown?
Well, Dan Campbell jokingly said it was, but I don't believe that to be true. I believe that they will elevate a practice squad wide receiver, which means it's either going to be Maurice Alexander, who has a long history of doing it, or it could even be Donovan Peoples-Jones, who actually has the most NFL experience returning punts. Personally, I would go with Alexander. I think he can do both easily. I've never seen Peoples-Jones do a kick return, and that's something they're going to need as well. I've seen Maurice do both. So I'm leaning towards a Maurice Alexander elevation and maybe a signing. You know what I mean? We'll see how it goes. And depending on the extent of Khalif's injury, but I'm leaning Alexander.
All right, defensive tackle DJ Reader illness, did not practice Monday, full practice Tuesday.
Yeah, it seems like it's past him, so he should be okay. No worries there.
Cornerback Carlton Davis, thumb knee injuries, did not practice Monday or Tuesday.
Again, he was saying he felt good, but he was also pointing to the fact that medical checks were going to determine if he could play. And it sounds like he's in the same boat as Decker and Raymond, where there he's not expected to play. That could be a bit of a problem as well. I don't think it's as significant as Decker, but I do think it's a blow to the secondary, who is now one of the best secondaries in the NFL. And you know, I think he could get by with the thumb, but if it's a knee, they may be looking at this saying, maybe we can get past Chicago without you. Let's get you ready for Green Bay, right? And he may not play. At least it sounds like he may not play in this game. So then the question becomes, what do you do at corner? And before we talk about
We
that,
know what they're going to do.
let's talk about the last guy in
All
the
right.
injury report, and then we'll talk about corner.
Cornerback Terrion Arnold, groin injury, full practice Monday, Tuesday.
So it sounds like he's going to be back, right? He got injured Thursday, full practice Friday, surprising downgrade on Saturday, didn't play Sunday, back at full practice Monday, back at full practice Tuesday. So expectations are pretty good that he's going to play as well. So he'll return, he'll take on one spot. And then, but I think as a rookie, he's going to play his side of the field like he normally does. Like, I don't think he's going to be like traveling around. He's not going to step up and be corner one. I think they're just going to play him straight up, kind of like the way they always have. And if Carlton doesn't play, then you're left with a couple of options. Option one, you do what you did last week and just put Kendall Vildor in the starting lineup. Option two, you try Dorsey out instead because Dorsey's got a little bit more speed. And so maybe you think that matches up better against Chicago. Or three, you could try Emmanuel Mosley. And then the last option is you put Mosley in the slot and you kick Amik out to the outside. And so I'm not certain how those will go. What I am thinking, though, is that, or I wouldn't be surprised about, is to maybe see Amik play in the slot and then maybe get some run outside. And then when they are in nickel, when Amik is in the slot, they'll have to lean on one of their reserves to play some outside snaps.
I think we're going to see plenty of Kendall Vildor on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm with you.
They're
I
going to
do think,
throw it at him nonstop, just like how the Colts did.
yeah, I think that could be, it very well be what happens. Got to remember, Kendall Vildor is a former Chicago Bear, former starting Chicago Bear corner as well. So he'll have something to prove. They also know, you know, where his weaknesses are. So it's could be a tough one for him. But it wouldn't surprise me to see them mix some other guys into things and kind of see, you know, who else they can get some snaps to and beyond just Kendall.
All right, let's talk about this Colts game. Once again, you know, led strongly by the running attack, 137 yards on the ground. It's all three touchdowns being delivered either by Jahmyr Gibbs or David Montgomery. There's a record attached to all that.
Yeah, 25 straight games that they've scored a rushing touchdown. That's an NFL record. And I honestly
including playoffs.
Yes, including playoffs. So I don't see them stopping anytime soon, right? Like the run game is such an important part of what they do. Last year, Montgomery had 11 touchdowns rushing. He's already at 10. Last year, Gibbs had 10 rushing touchdowns. He's already at 10. And with six games left, I mean, I expect them to keep going. I expect them to keep putting rushing touchdowns in, and this streak will get into the 30s before it slows down. It's not that I don't think a team can get up and stop them. I just think it's such a focal part of what they do, and they're so good at it. It's almost an automatic that they're getting to that point where they can score. So I fully expect it to happen again this week.
You know, Goff was solid, not spectacular, but did complete over 72% of his passes, didn't throw any interceptions. Wasn't a perfect offensive effort, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. They were a little chunky here and there.
Mm-hmm. I thought Tim Patrick had his best game.
As he was good on Sunday.
Caught four passes for 55 yards. Was a pretty stout blocker as well. Really good game overall. Makes a really, really nice third piece for the Lions that they've been looking for really for like the last 9 months. You know, once they realized they weren't getting Josh Reynolds back. And so, yeah, Patrick's going to be a guy that I think really pays off for them down the stretch. So really excited to see him get some opportunities. You know, your big guys got targets. Amon-Ra got six. J-Mo got seven targets, five catches. Amon-Ra got seven targets, six catches. That type of distribution, I think, is, again, going to be something you expect to see on a weekly basis. You know, you get seven, eight targets to St. Brown, five, six, seven to J-Mo. You get four to Tim Patrick, and then, you know, start peppering the other guys around, and you end up putting up 250 yards in an 18-point win, right? So I think this was a very good representation of what they're trying to do as far as spreading the ball around.
All right, this is going to be a hot take. I'm going to give it to you as a hot take, but mm-hmm. I don't really truly mean it this way, but here's the hot take. Brock Wright is more valuable than Sam Laporta, and the Lions would be more hurt if he got hurt than if Laporta got hurt.
Mostly from blocking. Is that what you're insinuating?
I don't. Not just blocking anymore.
Really? Okay.
It's a hot. I'm not being serious about it. I want to deliver it to you in hot take form. But sure. You know, Laporta, like, I don't. And people, if you're not watching every game, you're going to call it a regression. Like, you know, Laporta's numbers, they've regressed. You know, he's not getting any better. But when you watch these games, like, no, it's not true. They have all these other guys to throw to. Like, I'm sure if they put a mandate on Goff, it's like, well, you better throw the ball seven times to Sam Laporta. Well, he could, but like, that's not the goal of their offense. So I don't know if you want to address that at all.
I do think he was injured in training camp, and then that injury lingered, and then he missed time, and then he's had another injury, and he's had these like lingering injuries that have really thrown off his ability to get on the same page. And you saw that. Goff did throw his way six times. They only completed three, and the other three were like wildly off. Like, they were not even close to each other in where they wanted to be. And that's unusual. I do think Sam still, I'll counter your hot take and say, I think Sam's blocking is equally as important, and he still poses a threat. I don't want to discount Brock Wright either. Like, I think that the two tight ends that they have are a perfect combination of what they're trying to accomplish. Big Sam Laporta fans have to be disappointed with a regression in stats, and you know, hopefully he gets healthy down the stretch. Hopefully him and Goff get back on that same page, and the timing of it will be, you know, hopefully ideal as they start heating up towards the playoffs.
Regression in stats, 100% true, but still third on the team in catches, yards, and touchdown receptions. we talked about the offensive, really the offensive line. It was all about the Decker injury, except sure. for, you know, like the Colts were able to get some pressure on Goff. Mm-hmm. On Goff. I mean, and the Bears probably will too. I don't think that's big of a stretch, but.
Well, it's different. Like the Colts' strength was in the
interior,
and they did really well pushing, getting a leg up on Graham. I think Frank had a bit of a down day as well, and the Bears are a different animal. And believe it or not, like the Bears don't look like the Bears that we've seen the last couple of years. And I think their defense is regressing, and we'll get into that a little bit more as well, but. They're more. They've got one interior penetrator that, if the Lions are not on point, could be a problem. And so, you do hope that Frank can have a bounce back game because he will be a really important cog in keeping Goff clean up the middle because of how the Bears scheme their front. So, again, we'll get into all this in just a bit here, but I think they could have maybe had a little bit of a stronger game from a pass protection standpoint. Goff was sacked 3 times. I think 2 of those were probably Goff's fault for holding onto the ball a little bit too long. But you know, they weren't quite as dominant as they've been in the past. Still. Terrific unit, still, you know, the best in the league, in my opinion.
Defensively, didn't give up a single point in the second half. You already mentioned that. Everything, if they now DJ Reader, Lee mm-hmm. McNeil, those two in yeah. the middle, they're the key yeah. to that whole defense. And if they lose one of that, and the Lions are already kind of getting to this point anyways with all their injuries, like.
Mm.
Another injury to like a big key player, like McNeil is number mm. one on the list. They're not the same team anymore. Like we might stay, they're not going to be in trouble. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to, they could sure. make noise in the playoffs, but I think would definitely put a dent in their odds of trying to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, like because they have suffered so many injuries, they're definitely getting closer to a point where it's a problem. I think they're still okay. I agree with you. McNeil is just a devastating player last game. Just beat the tar out of the middle of that Colts offensive line. It was that was unbelievable. Reader looked good pushing people around as well. And I really think that pair of defensive tackles are key to really everything that they want to get done up front. Right, it makes life easier on the passing in the secondary. It makes gaps easier for the linebackers. This is exactly what we envisioned the DJ Reader McNeil combination could be when they signed Reader, and so I think it's definitely paying off. It's peaking right now, and hopefully they can keep it going because. McNeil had one tackle. Reader had one tackle in the box score. But if you watch that game, my goodness, they kicked the tar out of him.
Yeah, and made losing Anzalone not as big of a deal.
Yeah.
Really, that they were able to use all those other linebackers and not really miss a step. Obviously not miss a step. They didn't allow a touchdown for the entire game.
They haven't allowed a touchdown in 10 quarters. Like, it's a... It's something. Like they've been pretty stout. Like that image of Aaron Glenn just sitting on the bench with his leg crossed, just sitting there soaking it in, was like he was relaxed, man, because his defense is playing lights out right now.
And Colts offensively basically played to their floor, right? They didn't rush for 100 yards. They didn't get much out of Jonathan Taylor, but they couldn't get much out of Jonathan Taylor because Lions got a lead, so they were kind of forced to throw more. Anthony Richardson was able to run the ball a little bit, but the Lions kept him in check. There was nothing huge and crazy. They kind of held Anthony Richardson to, you know, who he is, only completing 40% of his passes, which is below what he's capable of. But they really ho-hum is a word you used, although dominating performance by the defense. But at the same time, people would be out there. Now, I'm soaking in every moment of this because we don't know if this will ever happen again. Hopefully it will. On the right track. We're going to see this for years, but up to this point, you know, my lifetime, like, they don't do this. Like, I'm going to watch every minute of this, regardless of how boring it is, because
it's
how many terrible games I've sat through at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love every minute of it. One note that I want to put up, just to put a bow on this defense being dominant, in the last three games, they've only given up an average of 40.7 yards to running backs on average. So each game, 40 yards to running backs, which is and at the rate that the running backs were carried in the ball, 2.39 yards per carry average. That's how good the run defense has been of late. That's sensational. The last three games.
Yeah, certainly top notch. And like we already talked, it's those guys in the middle that are really making all the difference. Although, I mean, they're getting excellent support out of Pascal and so far Smith and Onzeriki and all those guys. Like, they're holding their own. No sacks, but like, they're holding their own. They're still okay, but we're getting to that edge where that next injury is going to be pretty devastating. On the defense, offense could probably, you know, the Decker injury is going to stink and it's going to hurt them, but like, there's still enough there. But defensively, like, you know, we're getting to the edge of, you know, who they could lose, you know.
Well, I guess they're getting guys back too.
Right. Well, yeah, and hopefully then that's kind of all moot by the time we reach the playoffs. You know, we are really only in the middle of the season. There still is a lot of football left to play. And speaking of that, we've got the Bears are coming into town on Thanksgiving Day.
I was going to say, this is, speaking of it being the middle of the season, if the Lions were to, the NFL released their first playoff clinching scenarios this week, and the Lions are the NFC represent the only team on the NFC that is in a playoff clinching scenario. There's like six different things that need to happen, but if the Lions win, and then there's like a whole bunch of these other things that happen, they'll have a chance to clinch a playoff seed with a win on Thanksgiving, which is ridiculous, right? Like, it all starts at the same time.
Eric, they'll have 11 wins. There's, in my head, zero scenario that they would make the playoffs.
Right? No, I'm with you, and I think DVOA supports that as well. Like, the odds of them not making the playoffs is less than like 0.01. But it starts with the 49ers have to lose, and I forget the 49ers are playing somebody good this week too. I'm blanking on it. But you need the 49ers to lose, and then you need a handful of like other things to happen. Like, you need the Cardinals to lose, the Seahawks to lose, and then like one of like the Buccaneers or Commanders or something like that, plus a Falcon. Like, there's six different things. We put them up on our website, but it starts with the 49ers and the Cardinals.
San Francisco visits the Bills on Sunday Night Football. There you go.
Yeah. So right off the bat, that's a good chance 49ers do lose. So then you look at the Cardinals game. Then the Cardinals,
they are at the Vikings.
So that could be a loss for the Cardinals as well. Like, so it's not an unheard of thing. Seahawks are playing a tougher game as
visiting
well.
Visiting the Jets.
Oh no, not a tough game. My bad. I retract.
No, but it is a West Coast team traveling to the East Coast, although that's not as big of a deal as it used to be.
Right.
Playing a 1 o'clock game, so it's really 10 a.m. for them.
Ooh. My point is, there's a chance. There's a chance the Lions leave
You're
the
telling
weekend.
Me there's a chance.
Chance they leave the weekend as a with a little star next to their name saying that they've clinched a playoff berth. Oh, they also, I'm sorry, I got one more
keep
fact.
Going. Yeah.
If they beat the Bears. If they beat the Bears, they also eliminate the Bears' ability to win the North. So the Bears would
be 4-8.
Yep, they'd be 4-8 and out of the running for the North. So hope for that too.
All right. Bears coming to town, 4-7 Bears. Just kind of mentioned they'd be 4-8 if they lost on Thursday. Lions favored by 10.5. So that's three straight. No, it's not, because they were only favored by 7.5.
Correct.
Over the Colts, because I was like, is that three straight games being favored by 10 points? No, it's not. But it is two straight home games in a row being favored by more than 10 points. Who knows when the last time that happened?
Oof.
Over-under is 48.5. The game is on Thursday at 12:30 on CBS, because it rotates back and forth between CBS, Fox every year. So we'll have Jim Nance, Tony Romo, and Tracy Wilson down on the field.
I want to pause you. I do think it is double-digit favored at home the last three home games, though. Titans, Jaguars,
and Bears. Oh, yeah, yep. Yeah, they would be favored by more than 10, yep.
Yeah.
Referees, Alan Eck, his ninth year in the NFL, is second as a referee, 11.9 penalty flags per game, 0.03 under the average. That average, that overall average, would that be 12.7, is coming down. It was the 13s earlier in the year, so they're telling them to keep the flags in their pockets.
Yeah, and I think the Lions have been pretty fortunate. They've been pretty disciplined with their penalties.
Only five penalties on Sunday for 45 yards, whereas the Colts were flagged 10 times.
That shows up in time of possession as well. And, Lions are extending drives. And I think if we go back, we could probably even look back and say that it was the same way with the Jaguars. I'm trying to look it up real fast here. I can't find it fast enough. I seem to remember the Jaguars taking a lot of penalties as well. So
no, Jaguars penalized 6 times for 40 yards, Lions 4 times for 46.
All right. So maybe it just felt that way. But I don't know much about Eck.
You must not live in the region.
He didn't do a playoff game last year. I know that. That's not unusual.
Oh, he's a bad fit. They're putting him on Thanksgiving.
No, but he would have been a rookie. That would have been his first year. So not surprising that he didn't do a playoff game as a rookie ref. I don't know much about him. I don't recall him being part of the Alliance game last year at all. So this might be the first time we see him.
He's from Georgia, resides in Georgia. So there you go. Not in the region. And we played the Jaguars at home. We, the Titans at home, Houston, that's a little further away from Georgia. It's all regional with these guys. Oddly enough, though, he's doing Thanksgiving, but maybe it's due to his less experience. I don't know. They usually have experience.
Maybe
he's doing a great job.
Doing a good job.
Thanksgiving game.
It's like a trial run. You do well here, maybe get a chance at the playoffs type of thing.
You like the CBS crew or the Fox crew? Would you rather this game be on CBS or Fox? The Galloping Gobbler Award, right? Isn't that what Nance and Romo give out?
No.
It's not a turducken leg.
That sounds right. I forget.
They had to come up with something because of the turducken. They couldn't just be like, nah, you know, we're not. I don't know. They might not even do the Galloping Gobbler. Like, I'm just remembering things from my check. It's definitely something they did give away. Like Phil Simms used to have like a face on a bus, but Fox nailed it, and Madden, somebody gave Madden that turducken and he fell in love with it. Changed football forever.
He had like six legs on that thing by the
end of it. Yeah, minimum. That's where you got to have four players in the game. You can just start handing out legs like crazy.
I don't know what they do, because I don't watch it on TV. So
that's right. You're always in person.
So I always forget that.
So this which is my fault. Is.
No,
it's fine. It's fine.
No, I do think. I do think there's something, but I just don't recall what it is. It's like you said, they change it and nothing has stuck, right? And because nothing has stuck, it just becomes something, you don't think about, I guess. Did you look it up?
Yeah, I'm looking. It's oh no, it's they tricked me. It's something else completely. We're gonna pretend like it's the Galloping Gobbler Award. Somebody will correct us either before the game, or people will correct us
Sure.
after, like, oh, look at those morons at it again. It's not the Galloping Gobbler. It's something else.
I mean, it's, I don't, I, it's a shtick, whatever it is. It's just
Hey,
a, it's
yeah.
just a, it's supposed to be fun. And I think the fun part will be watching to see if, I think the game itself should be highly, like I said earlier, it should be an entertaining game, to be played. I'm expecting a lot of Happy Lions fans.
All right, Bears 4-7. This is probably the eighth time I mentioned it. On a five-game losing streak. The classic loss to the Vikings last Sunday. Those poor Bears fans. We knew where
Yeah.
they are coming from.
Yeah, so two games, last two games. So they made that, we'll get to the, I'll talk a little bit about the offensive, how the offense has changed, but they changed offensive coordinators two games ago. And the new offensive coordinator gets the Packers in his first start, or as new OC, and then he gets the Vikings. They lose to the Packers on a blocked field goal. They get into range and then they get the field goal blocked and they lose that game because of that. And then they get into a situation where they against the Vikings where they have to score and get an onside
Scramble to
kick.
tie the game. Yeah, yes,
Yeah.
the onside,
Yeah.
everything.
And then get the and then have to kick the field goal. This time they hit it. It doesn't get blocked. Even though one got blocked earlier in the game, this time they hit it. Then it goes to overtime, and then they win the coin toss, and they get the Bears get the ball first,
With all momentum. With all momentum.
and they just fall apart.
They
Vikings
just
go
shot
down the
themselves in the
field,
foot.
score, and that's the end of that. They don't know how to win yet. They've played the division rivals close the last 2 weeks, which I think is
They're only divisional games to this point.
correct. And I think that has some people a little nervous that they played the division rivals so close that, and you know, this new change on offense, maybe it's a spark for them. But if you go back and you watch the games, you see a lot of pretty bad errors on the part of the Packers and the Vikings. For example, the Packers threw an interception inside the Bears 5 yard line, going for the touchdown, throwing an interception. And then they go in there again and they turn it over on downs inside the 5 yard line. So two times they got inside the 5 yard line and gave the ball away. The Vikings, same thing, got inside the five and then turned the ball over and gave it. So, like, right there, those are three things that normally don't happen, and they just happened in this week, right? It's Darnold looked terrible. Love looked great right out the bat, and then just became Mr. Inconsistent again. And like, they ran it, they kind of shot themselves in the foot and let the Bears get back in. And the Bears have that potential to get back into those games, but I don't think they can do it if their opponent isn't shooting themselves in the foot. And I don't think they have the firepower to hang with the Lions. And but again, divisional game, play things close. Some people are nervous. Hopefully by the end of this podcast, you won't be.
Put everybody at ease. All right. You have your crazy stat here. In the last 50 years, team with a 9-game winning streak, which is the Detroit Lions, would face a team on a 5-game losing streak. And that's happened 7 times. It's crazy that it's happened 7 times
I
in
know.
50 years. And then the winning streak stayed intact. So the nine win team winning 9 in a row, it stretches it to 10 every time.
Yeah. And for the Lions, a 10-win streak would be a franchise record, tying the 1934
Yeah,
team
we
that
are well
went
aware
10
of
and
this
0.
1934 team. We've been hearing about it for weeks. That must have been some team. And there's a couple of old timers out there. that may vaguely remember that team. I don't know. Like, you'd have to be 100, right? You'd have to remember that team when you were 10 years old. Mm. Maybe you could be a little bit younger, but that puts you at 9,800, and you're probably like, I want it. They got to find these people. Do they exist?
It'd be great. Remember the 1934. It'd be fun. I mean, yeah. So that 1934 team got it to 10-0, and then they went to 10-1, and so a win here, Lions match it, and then they become at least tied for the greatest Lions team ever. And they then go on, statistically, and then if they beat the Packers, then they would own it outright, right? So,
right.
That's the streak that they're heading towards, is that type of level. Now, you got to start winning, trophies and stuff before you start getting to the broader. The
greatest team ever, yeah.
Right.
As the Lions have those 50s teams, they have a handful of Hall of Famers on, each of them.
They do.
Different time, fewer players, like the league is smaller than you are, probably going to get more Hall of Famers per team because you're trying to get people in there, but. Yeah, it still means something.
Yeah, certainly.
All right, DVOA-wise, Lions still sitting at number one. Bears are down at number 24. Offensively, the Lions are number two, 10th throwing the ball, number two running the ball. The Bears are 19th overall defensively. A little surprise for the Bears, 10th against the pass and 30th against the rush. So that's good for the Lions right there. Flipping over to the other side, Lions defense is ranked number two overall. The Bears' offense is down at number 26. Lions stopping the pass, number one. Stopping the run, number three. Bears 26th at throwing the ball, although improved, as you mentioned, with the new offensive coordinator just over the last couple games, and running the ball 19th. Special teams, Lions still number one. Bears at number 11. Not bad.
If you look at the DVOA compared to the Colts last week, the Bears are about two ticks below in every category except for defending the pass where they're significantly better, but also significantly worse at defending the run. So it's a team that's going to be, from a DVOA standpoint, a little bit worse than the Colts team that you just beat. So things are changing. And we'll break that down in as we go. But the Lions hold an advantage pretty much everywhere. It's interesting. The NFL Next Gen stats that they made public this year, that you can search through this database when you do your film studies and stuff like that. They have a comparisons tracker, where they show you Lions, just like this, just like you broke down there, like Lions passing offense versus Bears passing defense. Who has the advantage, and how big of an advantage it is, anywhere from one star to five stars, right? So if the Lions have if it says Lions have an advantage and it's a five star, it means Lions should just dominate. So they break it down into like 40 different categories, and the Bears have an advantage in one. And it's mobile quarterback, and that's it.
Yep. Yeah.
Beyond that, it's everything has slanted towards the Lions here, and it's surprising how much it is. Now, again, this is a team that, like the Colts, made an adjustment a couple weeks ago, and the Lions will be adapting and they're going to get some new wrinkles that maybe they haven't seen on film, but. They have everything points towards the Lions having an advantage in this game.
All right. Start talking about the Bears. You did already mention the offensive coordinator, but the team is coached by Matt Eberflus. This might be a swan song. I don't know. It seems like they go back and forth on this guy all the time, whether he's going to be around. I'm guessing they're leaning on this is his last season in Chicago, but we'll see.
Boy, it sure sounds like it. Right. At the same time, you never know. And there was some reports out there earlier that said that the Bears were not planning on moving on from him. Like, there was some Bears insiders that were like, yeah, we're hearing from, you know, inside Hallis Hall or whatever it is, that that they're still planning on sticking with Eberflus. So there's a lot of people that are unimpressed with what he does. He's kind of vanilla. He doesn't really adapt well. He doesn't take a lot of ownership when mistakes are made. He put kind of points the finger at others. And there's questions about him losing the locker room. He's now on his third offensive coordinator in the last year, right? So right. A year ago, it was Luke Getsy, who was their offensive coordinator a year ago. And then they fired him in the offseason, and they hired Shane Walden. Shane Walden then lasts 9 games, and then he gets fired, and now it's Thomas Brown. So in the last year, this is their third offensive coordinator. What's interesting, one nice little fun fact, Getsy went on and got a job with the Raiders, and Getsy has also been fired by the Raiders. The only two offensive coordinators to be fired were both former Bears offensive coordinators underneath Eberflus. So
it's not a specialty. He doesn't know offensive coordinators.
Apparently not. So Shane Waldron comes from directly comes from Seattle, but before that, he kind of cut his teeth on with the Rams and Sean McVay. Thomas Brown knew Sean McVay from high school and got his first job in the NFL with Sean McVay and the Rams. And then he left. He ended up becoming the offensive coordinator for the Panthers last year, where he was the Panthers OC trying to get Bryce Young up to speed. And we know how the Panthers offense was last year. It was not great. So he gets fired. He comes over to Chicago because, one, he's got a connection, the McVay connection with Waldron, but he also has a connection with Eberflus through Frank Reich indirectly, because Frank Reich was the coach of Indy when Eberflus was that defensive coordinator, right? And then Thomas Brown was Frank Reich's offensive coordinator in Carolina. So like, there's a connection there as well. So he comes in with some indirect connections. He runs he ran a similar McVay style offense in Carolina. And so they're like, hey, can you come in with Waldron, help supplement what Waldron is doing? And then Waldron becomes stagnant. The offense is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. And eventually they fire Waldron, and now they can elevate Thomas Brown. Thomas Brown basically runs the same style of system, but he has simplified things essentially, right? So he has, like I said, kept the West Coast style of McVay's scheme in place. But what he's done is he's you know, elevated things that they had kind of moved away from. A little bit more play action, a little bit more pre-snap motion, right? Pre-snap motion was something he sort of got away from. Waldron didn't do much play action, and Brown hasn't done much play action as well. They're like in the lower third of the league in play action, which is unusual because that's usually a staple of West Coast. For example, Lions run to West Coast and they run more play action than anyone. They're number one in the NFL in play action. And so usually see a lot of play action with these West Coasts. And so, you know, Thomas is introducing these things. He tries to scale back the playbook a little bit. He tries to incorporate more quicker throws, more shorter routes, some zero read plays, some one read plays, but he's taking away like these plays that have like four or five reads to them, right? So he's just taking it down to make it more quarterback friendly. The biggest thing though is the quick throws. There's two big things that he did. There's the two things that have been the most impactful. The first one is quick throws. When he was under Waldron, Caleb Williams was throwing the ball on average at the 2.9 second mark. So 2.9 seconds to throw the ball from snap to throw. under the new guy, under Thomas, he's now got that down to, he's getting the ball out in 2.42 seconds. So almost a half second faster. And a half second may not seem like that much, but in football terms, that's a pretty significant amount. And when you look at statistically how that plays out, it's a lot more favorable. Caleb Williams is having a lot more success when he's getting the ball out faster. When he was throwing the ball at 2.9 seconds. So if he throws the ball over 2.5, so a quick throw is considered 2.5. So anything over 2.5, he throws it at about with a completion percentage just under 52%. He's got about 1,400 yards, 6 touchdowns. All 5 picks have come in situations where he's taken longer than 2.5 seconds. On plays when he's under 2.5 seconds, he's completing it at a rate of 77%. He's got almost 1,000 yards, 4 touchdowns, and no interceptions. So getting rid of the ball is a much cleaner way for him to be efficient, to build his confidence, and to put the ball in the playmaker's hands and then just kind of let them yak. Problem is, against the quick pass, if you have a defense that runs a lot of press man, like the Lions, you can defend that quick pass pretty well. In fact, the Lions defense only allows completion percentages of 66% against quick throws, which is the best in the NFL. Their success rate on those quick throws is 55% of the time. If there's a quick throw, 55% of the time, Aaron Glenn's defense wins that play. That's fourth best in the NFL. So one of the biggest things that Caleb Williams does well and that they've incorporated with him is also one of the Lions' strengths. It's one of the things that makes them the number one passing defense in DVOA is their press man scheme eats up the quick throws. The second thing that the Bears have incorporated is they've just really leaned on the run game a ton more. And even when it's not successful, they've still been leaning on that run a ton. And they, again, it's designed to help keep the offense in a rhythm, and it's helped designed to take a little bit of pressure off Caleb Williams. But like I pointed out earlier, over the last 3 games, they've only given up 40 yards on average to running backs. And if you're giving Swift and Johnson the ball and they're only getting 2.39 yards a carry, well, you're not going to stay in rhythm because you're not going to stay on the field, right? So the two biggest factors that the Bears have incorporated to give Caleb success are the two things that the Lions are absolutely rolling in right now. And so that's potentially a big problem for this Bears offense and a potentially big advantage for the Lions.
All right, well, I'm going to run through the depth chart. Already talked about quarterback, rookie Caleb Williams, first overall pick. Eric already broke down what he does. Tyson Bagent's the backup. Running backs, former Lion DeAndre Swift leads the way in the backfield. Roschon Johnson is his number one backup, with Travis Homer as the third stringer.
Swift, under Waldron, was getting the ball about 75% of the time. Under Thomas, he gets it about 60. So he's scaled Swift's usage back quite a bit. Roschon Johnson then has conversely gone from 25% of the time up to 42% of the time. So he's seen his snaps go up in the last 2 games as well. They're very much a thunder and lightning combination, but they're also very predictable. So if you are watching, depending on what back is on the field, you should know where the run is going, because Swift, as we've seen, always tries to bounce the ball to the outside. Always. Whether the run sheet lane is there or not, Swift always goes outside. Johnson's the opposite. Johnson stays inside, mostly in between the tackles all the time, just put the head down and go. He might get just outside the tackle, but he's not a guy who's like sprinting to the sidelines like Swift does. So there's not a lot of crossover between them. So if depending on which one's on the field, you ID which back it is, and you can kind of know if they're going to run it, how that run's going to be executed.
Wide receivers, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and Rome Odunze are the starters, with DeAndre Carter, Colin Johnson, and Tyler Scott coming off the bench. The Moore Allen Odunze combo, one of the better combos the Lions have faced this season.
So, again, with this shift, they've shifted how these guys are being operated. For whatever reason, both coordinators have fed the ball to Keenan Allen like he's the number one receiver on their team. And he looks like an older version of Keenan Allen that's not as fast and can only play in the slot. When they move him to the outside, they still target him, but he's not as effective. And Keenan Allen, in my opinion, is probably the third best wide receiver on this team. Yet both offensive coordinators look to Allen as their top option. DJ Moore is really their best option, but they've really drastically changed how they've used him. When Waldron was the coordinator, the average depth of target for Moore was 9.8 yards. In the last two games under Thomas, the average depth of target for Moore is 1.9 yards. So he's no longer running these routes into the field as much as he's sticking behind a line or getting quick passes to get the ball in his hands and then let him get yak. To his credit, he's really good at the yak. Okay. So in the last two games, he's had 14 receptions and he's gained 142 yards. Seven of those receptions, so half of those receptions, have been behind the line of scrimmage when he's caught the ball, and he's gained 96 yards. Yet he's produced 120 yards of yak on those seven passes. So he's running 24 yards more. He's behind on those seven passes, he's behind the line of scrimmage 24 yards worth. You know, that's an average of 3.5 yards behind the line of scrimmage when he's getting the ball on half of the catches right now. Like, that's a ton. This is part of the design to let Caleb Williams get the ball out quick. The Lions start diagnosing these like quick passes and these kind of quick bubble screens or little cross unders or cross just over the top of the lines, they start diagnosing those and they start shutting those down and reducing his yak, you will just completely throw this entire offense off. Like, completely throw this offense off, because they lean on DJ Moore and putting the ball in his hands and allowing him to gain some chunk yardage as part of an extension of their run game. And if you take that away, their offense is going to be in a big problem. So DJ Moore is a really big key. Keenan Allen, like I said, he's going to get fed. He's going to be number one, but he's not the guy. I'm not worried about him. I'm worried, number one, DJ Moore. If you can take away what he does, what they're using him, the way they're using him right now, you got a good opportunity. Now, one thing to watch out for, double moves, right? We've seen this before where they like do the fake bubble and then he, you know, they fake pump pass to him, right? And then he takes off and they throw into the turkey hole behind him and then he goes for a touchdown, right? You got to watch out for the double moves here. Don't get caught with the trick play because you're trying to undercut the screen or something. I think Odunze is the
future,
the best pure route runner, the best pure downfield catcher. He's starting to get hot, which is good for him. And he would be the guy that I would be the most concerned with down the field. So those three guys are on the field about 90% of the time for all of them or more. And they really don't use any of the other depth guys, not that much at all. So it's really, you got three guys that are all stylistically different. And just again, if you know what each guy does, then you can defend them better.
Tight end starters Cole Kmet, also have Gerald Everett, the ageless wonder Mercedes Lewis, still playing at 40 years old.
Yeah, Everett and Lewis they're too old at this point. They kind of are. Like, they still get used, like, they still do 12 personnel, like 20% of the time. Everett, still gets 10 snaps a game. Lewis still gets like 10 to 15 snaps a game. But they are shells of what they used to be, in my opinion. Kmet is a great young tight end, but he's been an afterthought for most of the season. Now, Thomas, as the coordinator, he's tried to get Kmet more involved. And so I think Kmet, after DJ Moore, Kmet is probably the number one guy that you have to pay attention to. The nice thing about that is that, according to DVOA, the Lions are the best team in the NFL at defending the tight end. They are number one in defending the tight end in DVOA. So stick with it. Do what you've been doing. Try and take Kmet away, because I think he is the second biggest threat on this offense.
Offensive line from left to right: Braxton Jones, Ryan Bates, Coleman Shelton at center, Matt Pryor at right guard, and your Darnell Wright at right tackle.
I think if they ever got on the same page, they have the chance to be good. But Braxton Jones, he can be kind of hit or miss. He's more good than bad, in my opinion. Tevin Jenkins is hurt a lot, and so that becomes a problem for him. He just can't stay healthy, even like in game, just can't stay healthy. Sheldon was not supposed to be their starting center, but he is now. So, but he's playing okay, in my opinion. I don't think Pryor or Sheldon are really that great. They're going to end up getting a lot of DJ Reader. And then Darnell Wright, I think, is still kind of working through some stuff. I think he's a terrific player. It's his second year, so expectations are a little higher. But I think he's still kind of shaking off a couple of injuries. And because of that, I think his performance has been a tick inconsistent. But overall, he's a terrific player. The strength is their tackles, in my opinion. And so that, again, this sets up for a good day, potentially good day, where you're going to need Aleem and DJ Reader to be on their best. They will pull guards. They're running, especially with Swift. When they do that, Tevin Jenkins is the guy that they'll pull. So you got to watch him on the move, especially the DBs. Got to keep an eye for him. But, he just seems like he could get hurt at any snap. He just missed a game 2 games ago. He played last week, but the week before he didn't play because of injury. And so when he's there, he's good. But the question is when he's there. So keep an eye on that left side. Left side's better than the right.
All right. Flipping over to the other side, to the Bears defense, defensive coordinator Eric Washington.
Washington comes from the he got most of his experience learning under two different coordinators: Sean McDermott, who is the head coach of the Bills, and then Rod Marinelli was a big influence.
Oh, Rod!
Yes, he spent a lot of time working with. He actually got his first job again with the Bears so he started at Texas A&M, then stayed around in college. Actually, he was a coach at Texas A&M when Dan Campbell was a player at Texas A&M, which is interesting. And then he coached defensive line in college, and then he ends up with the Bears, and then he ends up really honing his coaching skills under Marinelli, who was, again, defensive line genius, a lot of people would label him that without question. And then Sean McDermott really helped him kind of mold a lot of what he's done. He runs a 4-2 scheme. They run a lot of zone. They run zone about 72% of the time, which is in the top 10 amount of zone usage. They play a lot of bend don't break, which means they put the They want the offense to catch the ball in front of them and then make their tackles and prevent yak. They do an okay. They're not exceptional at preventing yak, but they're okay. They're closer to league average than I think you would want for this type of scheme. But they've started to, because they've been struggling with the run, they've started to drop safeties into the box more. And so when you do that, that takes them out of their two kind of cover two shells that they have, and that puts them in more single high and more cover three. And because of that, it leaves them a little bit more vulnerable in their secondary. But again, as you talked about in DVOA, they have one of the better top 10, you know, secondary. They feel willing to risk it. Most of the time they keep the defense in front of them, but they could, they can be susceptible to a big play because of the fact that they end up, you know, dropping that one safety back. So, last thing is it's a 4-man front. They don't blitz much. They only blitz around 23% of the time, which is like 23rd in the league. They really rely on their front four to get home. And their front four has not been getting home over the last month and a half. It's been a problem for them. Montez Sweat, who is their best pass rusher, just had 6 pressures against the Vikings. That was the first time this year he eclipsed 4 pressures in a game. That's startling to me that he never gotten past 4 so far. Like, and I think that speaks to the struggles that they've been having with the pass rush. So whether you have a lack of a pass rush and you're not really good against stopping the run, it's potential problems for a defense that is, like I said, headed in the wrong direction.
All right. That defensive line, which you kind of just mentioned, the defensive ends, Montez Sweat and DeMarcus Walker, with Daryl Taylor, Austin Booker, Daniel Hardy, Jacob Martin, and Dominique Robinson. Lower down on the depth chart, the defensive tackles, we got Gervin Dexter Sr. And with the injury to Andrew Billings, it's either Zach Pickens or Byron Cowart at the other defensive tackle slot, with Chris Williams also in the mix.
So Sweat plays 70 to 80% of the time. And then you see Darnell Taylor as his direct backup, which you'll also see Darnell Taylor get a little bit of time on the opposite side. DeMarcus Walker is so Sweat and Taylor play mostly on the left side, like almost exclusively on the left. They'll flip over a little bit, but most of the time it's on the left, which means that your best pass rusher in Montez Sweat and your probably second best pure pass rusher in Taylor, they're going to face off against Penei Sewell pretty much the majority of the game. So their best weapons to get home have to face Penei Sewell on a down-to-down basis. So that's right there, I think. It's definitely an advantage to the Lions, and it's one of the reasons why, again, I think if they had the chance to switch Penei this week, I don't necessarily think they would have. Walker is more – they both run kind of like a wide nine. And Sweat gets a little wider than Walker does, but they almost it's unusual how they blitz. It's like one of them goes like upfield and the other one kind of stays a little bit more static in line, almost like they're playing like a two gap scheme. Like they're trying, like the defensive tackles and the and one defensive end kind of stay at the same level and don't push up the field too hard, while the other one really pushes up the field really hard. And it doesn't like, it seems a little off to me. It doesn't, they're not really getting a ton of pressure that way. Early in the season, they were getting a lot of pressures from Dexter Gervin, who was more of their pure three technique, but they were also using him over the center at like a nose guard spot, like at a one, even though he's more of a pure three. He was doing well in those situations, but again, you're probably going to get him against Frank. And so your best interior pressure is either going to get is likely going to draw Frank's attention, whether he's lining up over Graham or not. I think Frank's still going to shade towards him. So you got these outside guys that aren't working necessarily in unison. They're kind of alternating what they do. They're not getting a ton of pressure. Sweat's getting more, and he's your best, but he's facing Panay. The interior pressure is going to draw Frank. And so I don't know, you know, they're going to have to rely on whoever is the guy who lines up over the left tackle, which could be Skip, right? And so most of the time that's going to be Walker. Well, Walker, he's okay. He's an average player. He's got some good upside to him, but he's not Sweat. So do they switch everything that they've done in the past and put Sweat on the right side to try and get that advantage? I don't know. Maybe they consider it, but I don't necessarily think a team that's in this situation is in the habit of just making these big flips for whole games necessarily. So I think the Lions' offensive line matches up well. And if they need to keep a tight end like Brock Wright, who's incredibly valuable, as you pointed out earlier, next to Skip to help him out, that'll be just fine. They have potential. The starters are not bad at all, but they're not really producing. And because they're a penetrating line, they leave gaps. And because they run that kind of wide nine, they leave gaps. And so you want to run that. Don't run off tackle, run that inside tackle, right? In between the guard and the way they kind of shift up, they usually go a little bit heavier. They usually have Sweat on the left, and then they have the nose basically on the center, and then the three technique guard, and then the right tackle on the left tackle. And that usually leaves the opponent's right guard free. So in this situation, that would be Zeitler. So if you have Zeitler blocking no one and Panay blocking Sweat, I might just check run and just go right behind them. Like if I see that, if I line up and I see that advantage and I see no one over Zeitler, and you might get you have Zeitler on a linebacker, I might audible into that run right a lot. Right? I mean, like, because I'm watching how they're attacking these the last two games against the Packers and the Vikings, and I'm like, my goodness, if that's the Lions, that whole right side is just going to just gash them. Mm-hmm. So I'm anticipating a lot of run rights in this game, and I think they have the horses. Now, Sweat is not a bad run defender by any means, but if you let Sewell box him out, or if you crash Zeitler down on him and then pull Panay out into space, it's problems. It's problems for the Bears. So I'm hoping for a lot of run rights.
Linebackers, TJ Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds. We'll see a little bit of Jack Sanborn, Amen Ogbon Bamiga, and Noah Sewell.
Yeah. Noah only plays on special teams, which is probably a good thing, because I don't think – it would be interesting to see if they put him out, like, over his brother.
Get run over by his brother.
Yeah, because his brother would run over him. Like, his brother would mess him up. Now, Edwards and Edmonds, the starters, they were sensational last year.
Right.
Yep. Not so much this year. Edmonds is good because he's got that length, but they really don't blitz him. Both of them play the whole game. They both of them never leave the field. And then Sanborn comes onto the field, you know, 20-30% of the time whenever they're in their 4-3 base. But most of the time they live in nickel. So Sanborn is only on the field those, like I said, 20-30% of the time. But Edwards and Edmonds have been kind of average this year. And I don't know exactly what the issue is. It could be them getting stretched. It could be them not fitting their gaps right. I can't really put like a finger on necessarily what it is about them, but they have not been the dynamic players that they were in the past. Again, because they use a lot of zone, you see these two dropping, and they have good coverage skills. But what I saw from the Vikings and the Packers is they're just dropping balls over the top of them. You just, the safeties are dropping far back, the linebackers are dropping in the depth, and they just kept throwing balls over the top of the linebackers and right in front of the safeties, and it was open. It was there all day. So, not as scary as they used to be, but highly talented. They're not playing great right now.
Corners are Jalen Johnson, Tyreek Stevenson, and Kyler Gordon would be the nickel. Reserves are Amir Speed, Terrell Smith, and Josh Blackwell.
So, Jalen Johnson is one of the best corners in the NFL. It's very interesting how they play him. They play him almost like a college corner. You know how in college they have like field corners and sideline corners?
Boundary corner, yep.
Yeah. That's how they play him. They play him as a field corner a lot of the time, like 80% of the time or something ridiculous like that. So they're not going to match him up one-on-one. And so because they play him as the field corner so often, you can, if you're Ben Johnson, anticipate this. When you get into a situation where you're on the short side, let's say you're on the right hash, just keep JMO on the right side. And then you have JMO up against Stevenson. Now Stevenson, he's rocked. Like he's not the guy he was at the beginning of the season. Stevenson was the guy who, when they played Washington and Washington was setting up for the Hail Mary, Stevenson was the guy waving at the crowd and taunting the crowd instead of covering his guy. And then when the Hail Mary is thrown up, he is the guy who tips the ball, who gets his hand on the ball, that knocks the ball up into the air. And the guy that he was supposed to be covering is the one who catches it for the touchdown. So a trifecta of errors for Stevenson.
On comedy that one of play. Errors.
And he has not been right since. Corners need to have short-term memories, and Stevenson looks like he is holding on to that play, and it is up inside.
That was all over the place. He couldn't forget it. They kept showing. He kept seeing it, I'm sure.
And so what they've started to do is they've started to supplement his snaps with Terrell Smith, the backup. Smith is not playing bad. He's actually playing decent. And so what you're seeing is Stevenson is spending less time on the field and more time on the bench, and they're rotating these two guys to the point that some Bears people are even suggesting Stevenson might not start anymore. Like, it's getting close to the point where Stevenson might just end up on the bench because his confidence is so shot. He's not playing well, not at all. So Johnson's terrific. Avoid him. Attack the other corner, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, like with Vildor, right? Like, you're going to see a lot of balls going towards Vildor. Right.
Yep.
Whoever's on that opposite side, try and get JMO against him and try and set him up, because let JMO just run on him a little bit and see what happens to him. Because if they're in single high and JMO's running a nine off the sideline and you've got Johnson, okay, right hash, JMO on the right side, so that puts Johnson in the field, and then they run a single high. Just stretch JMO on a nine route and let him run past that corner, have the safety, single high safety, try and get over and cover it, and just test it. Just see what you can do. Because if you hit on it, it's a touchdown, right? I mean, like, so the way that they play defense, you can set them up for a mismatch, and I expect them to. I expect Ben Johnson to go in his bag and find something. I should point out, Kyler Gordon, the nickel, is very good. It's very good. It's very good nickel. This is the second week in a row, really good nickels. He could be a problem. I think St. Brown matches up well against him at the same time. I could see him having a good day. So I don't think anybody can shut really St. Brown down, but
right.
Now, Kyler Gordon is very good safety, and very good nickel corner.
Safeties, Elijah Hicks and Kevin Byard III are the starters, with Tarvarius Moore and Mr. Simone Biles, Jonathan Owens, as the reserves.
Elijah Hicks was hurt last week, and Jonathan Owens started in his place. Elijah Hicks has not practiced this week at all, and expectation is he might miss again, which means Owens would be put into the starting lineup again. So Hicks was their single high, and they ran. He got hurt against the Vikings on a deep shot. He got tied up with I forget which one of the Packers receivers he got tied up with, but gets tied up. He goes down awkward, and he ends up having to leave the game, and he didn't come back for the Vikings, and he doesn't look like he's going to be back for this one. And so that would put Jonathan Owens as the single high. So again, you've got a backup single high, and that's a lot of field to cover. And if you can get J-Mo matched up against corner two, and I would stretch that field and try and see if Owens has the range that his wife does, because if he doesn't have his wife's athleticism, he's going to have a hard time trying to match J-Mo.
All right. That's it for the defense. Special teams, kickers, Cairo Santos, journeyman, never made a Pro Bowl. He's nailing all of his 50-yard plus kicks. He's 7 of 8 if the distance is 50 plus. Otherwise, other than that, he's only hit 9 of 12, you know, only 75% on the season. He had the kick blocked, as Eric pointed out, against the Packers to lose that game.
And the Vikings. And the Vikings. He's had him blocked.
Yeah, he's had two consecutive games.
Yeah, so, that's rough.
Average kicker isn't kicking so great. He's had a couple of good seasons, and not too distant past.
The flaw right now that's been exposed is the long snapper and the player adjacent to the long snapper, which I feel really bad saying. Because they're long, you know, they're long.
Scott Daly's the long snapper, former Lion.
Scott Daly.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Scott has, it doesn't look like he's moving. Like he's snapping and he's not really moving his feet. He's snapping and just kind of like staying there. And he was focusing on the follow through. He was bent over a little bit too much, which allowed the gap to come, the Packers guy to gap in between him and then get the block. And, I think the blocker next to him, I don't know who it is, but he's let guys through a couple times. It's their left side. So again, if FIP is watching this, put your best guys on that side and try and push Daly and hit the person to his direct left. That's the weakness. It's trying to see if you guys can get a block as well.
Man, you'd think that'd be more correctable, you know, like,
yeah.
In lower levels of football, that's easily correctable. Like, and I know it's the NFL, so a little different story. And it could just be, you know, a couple of bad snaps, which can't happen, as we've talked about. Like, the long snapper has to always be on, and the protection always has to be correct. But so it's kind of odd this happening back to back. But you think it's a problem that they could get cleared up pretty easily.
You'd think so, but I mean,
it's all fundamentals.
Sounds like my checks are getting deposited by Scott Daly. And we'll see if we'll see if he lets this one go again.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it for sure. Torrey Taylor is the rookie punter, averaging 47.7 yards per kick with his net, which isn't totally his fault, under 40. So not so great of a start.
Yeah,
37% of his kicks are inside the 20.
It's fine. It's average. Nothing to get excited about.
Return men. For the Bears, I lost it. DeAndre Carter's returns both punts and kicks.
He's fast. Also fumbled a punt return against Minnesota. So
always devastating when somebody fumbles a punt return. You're getting the ball back, and then all of a sudden it's gone. Same thing with a kick return. Yeah. Daly, as he pointed out, is the long snapper, and that's it.
I like Scott too. Disappointed to see him struggling right now. At the same time, you play for the Bears, so I will look for your weaknesses.
So
and hope I'm the okay Lions with capitalize that. On him.
Yeah.
I went the wrong way last week.
No.
Got it last week. Okay.
Yeah, you had the lower.
Oh, because I got it.
Yeah, you had lower score. I had 13 points for the Colts. You had 10. They only got 6. You get it. Yeah. Nice. So you've pulled in. It's 7-4 on the season.
It's not over yet.
You're getting close. Yeah, you got 6 games to make up a 3-game gap. So I have to maintain my focus here.
Yep. All right. So. The Bears, like, I mean, the Bears have been playing better those last couple weeks. They bear, like, but part of me thinks is now it's time to fall apart. Barely lose to the Packers, barely lose to the Vikings. Now it's time to be like, I don't know what we can do, and then you just kind of give up. Short week, which should play in the Lions' favor because they do this every year. Although you pointed out the Bears were the team that's beat them 3 of those 7 times right, those losses. So, like, really not an advantage for the Lions to be playing on. On Thanksgiving. I don't know. I think they could keep it kind of close just because of the way Caleb's playing lately. Mm-hmm. That, like, if they're losing, they'll be able to get a garbage time touchdown, maybe 2. Maybe not. You know, the Lions defense playing so well, maybe they aren't going to give up touchdowns. But I think the Bears offense is a little better than the ragtag groups of offenses they've faced in the last couple of weeks. I'm going to go Lions 26-20 to get off the Thanksgiving schneid.
All right. So you have them not covering.
Not covering and the under.
I am going to go a little bit bigger and a little bit lower. I'm going to stick with my 31 points for the Lions that I've been that I've picked the last 5 weeks in a row now. Mm-hmm.
Well, the average one was the 32.7 or whatever. It's smart.
Right. But I'm changing it. I'm going to give them 20. I'm going to pick the same number as you. All right. So I'm basically taking the over. If I really wanted to play the game, I'd say 27 and just that way I take the over.
Yeah,
but
I'm going to
go 31, give you a little bit of a chance. No. Yeah. All right. 31-20. That's where I'm going. So that covers the spread too. Just barely, but it covers it. Cover the spread and the over. I'm going for fun times. I wouldn't even be surprised if they didn't even score 20. Like if they
They might pull another 6 out of the hat. Maybe a 7. Maybe they give up a touchdown. I don't know. Like, I don't know. This has to stop at some point. I mean, hopefully it doesn't. But I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Looking back at these scores that they have 6 points, 6 points, 23 to the Texans, mostly because of the turnovers, 14 points to the Packers, 14 points to the Titans. The Vikings were the last team to score 29. So since the Vikings game, they've had 14, 14, 23, and the 5 turnover game, and then 6-6. I wonder if my 20 is too high. It's an interesting dilemma, you know? Like, I'm going to audible. I'm knocking it down to 17. That way I keep you, because that was my initial gut was 17. And I was going to do 20 to play the game and blah, blah, blah. But no, I'm going to go with my gut and go back to 17. So 31-17. I'm calling
for really your gut or your knowledge of division, because 31-17, the Lions average 32.7 points per game. So 31 is 1.7 points away from that. And they give up an average of 16.6 per game. And you're going to 17. Like, you're just doing the average Lions score, which is not a bad plan. You're up 3 games. It's a smart thing to do.
All right. Perfect.
Of the Lions hitting their average.
I didn't realize that was their average. I knew their average on offense was up in the 30s. But yeah. Wow. I think back to where this defense was a year ago, you know, especially in the secondary.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing how they've changed things.
They had a good run defense last year, but yeah, definitely against the pass, it was awful. 31, 32, they were sitting at the bottom of the league every week.
Yeah.
And easy to pick. It's not like it was due to the Lions being up 21 points and the other teams having to come back. It's just, it was just the way to beat them. You know, like that's the way you're going to get past the Lions. Although only five teams did it the regular season. All right. Reviews. Roaster Jack gave us a nice 5-star review. Much appreciated, Roaster Jack. Good name.
Nice.
A couple extra reviews over on the Spotify side, so thank you for that. So everybody, we appreciate the reviews. Keep them coming, and we appreciate the listening. Keep it coming.
I am not looking forward to this Saturday's game as a Michigan fan. So I am going to be.
Anything can happen.
I am going to be spending my weekend doing two things. One, I will be partaking in the POD charity stream that's going on all day with Jeremy. I'll be on with him a lot for that. And two, I'm going to spend some time with my family because I have been doing double work this week for the Thursday game. So I'm going to try and take a little bit of time maybe because I don't really have any interest in watching college football this week.
Well, I guess I understand. you should be forced to, like, there's got to be some way we could force you to watch this game. So you won the title last year and maybe it wasn't on the up and up, but you should watch these games, watch these six losses, you know, drink them in.
I tell you, so what I do is I put the game on. So it's not like, I just don't sit.
Your white noise.
Yeah, right. And my kids like football like crazy. Mm-hmm. So they will sit there and they will listen to it and watch it. And so I had the Northwestern game on last week and I was sitting there doing some work at my desk and it was relatively close score for the majority of what I was watching. And then I went away and did a couple of things on the house. And when I came back and it was like 55 points. Yeah, I was like, I have no idea what happened there. But I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. But yeah, like I've been so dialed in on these Lions. I'm probably, in all honesty, I'm probably going to be preparing for the Packers on Saturday. That's probably sure. What a lot of my focus is going to be on. So
Thursday followed by a Thursday.
I'm not a fan of that. I don't know if you are or not, but I don't like it.
Off after those games. I thought that was like the deal. If you play on a Thursday, you definitely get the 10, not 10 days off, but you definitely get 10 days for your next game. And whatever. It's a week out, but yeah, it does.
I mean, they get it eventually, right?
Yeah, they get it eventually, but they're supposed to get it right away. I don't know. Whatever.
I think the Lions are going to try and adhere to that with the players, right? Because the players didn't get a day off on Tuesday like they normally do. And they'll go right into Thursday. So I'm pretty sure they're going to get like Friday, Saturday off. I don't know about Sunday, but I know they'll probably get Friday, Saturday off based on like what Campbell has kind of suggested. Maybe they come back and practice on Sunday. Maybe they don't. I would think they would, like, just because it'll help them keep their rhythm, but I don't know. We'll see.
At least the Packers got to deal with this too, because they also play on Thanksgiving. Although it would be better if they had a play like on Sunday, then have to come back around and play.
Right, right. I'm very interested to see that game. I think Miami's got just enough firepower to make that game exciting. So, be nice to see them lose. Would make things a lot more comfortable, right? Like,
right, yeah. How great this Lions season has been to only still be one game ahead of a rebuilding Vikings team.
Mm-hmm.
Two games ahead of the Packers team.
You said it earlier. Who do the Vikings play this week? Is it Arizona? I think that's what you said. That's a tough game, low key tough game. I wouldn't. I mean, right. I could see Arizona winning that game. I could see Miami beating the Packers. And man, what a
Miami's been
break.
On a little bit of a roll.
Right. And I could see the North winning out both those games as well. But what a break that would be if they could get a couple losses out of these two teams that are chasing them.
Not because, that's not how it works for the Lions.
No,
you know
I know.
That. They're still trying to destroy a curse.
I do. It just, yeah, I'm looking at it like there's a couple of tough games on the schedule. Like you said, 49ers Bills is going to be an interesting one. Either way, you know, I mean, from a rooting standpoint, you're rooting for the Bills. At the same point, how hot do you want the Bills when they come in after the Packers? You know
you
what
want
I mean?
Them hot.
Right.
You want to beat a real hot Bills team.
Okay. And look, they're going to be getting those 10 days off between the Packers and the Bills. And so that
well,
little
they
mini
might get
bye,
an extra day than that, right? Isn't there
right.
The chatter that's going to move to Monday Night Football?
Oh boy.
They're going to flex out Monday Night Football. That's going to be terrible for you. But
oh yeah. Certainly terrible for me. I would, being good has its downside in these situations. But I mean, that game's a 4:25 game on Sunday scheduled right now. So we'll see if that actually ends up getting flexed out or not. But boy, if that game gets flexed and then they have the Bears game after that, both times they play the Bears, it would be on short weeks. That's pretty interesting. But I think the Bills game's the toughest game left on their schedule. You know, the 49ers.
Well, their injury
they
woes and all. Yeah, they have all sorts of problems right now. The Packers and Vikings are both tough games.
I was going to say, I'm seriously looking at the Packers and the Vikings as maybe being more difficult than the 49ers right now. We'll see what kind of desperation mode the 49ers will be in, but they certainly haven't looked like themselves, and the injuries have been a problem again for them. So you got to get this win. You got to take care of business against the Bears. You got to get your focus for the Packers, get up for the Bills, and then it's at Bears, at Niners, and at that point you're just knocking people out of playoffs, right? Like you're like, all right, you know, Bears, now you're officially out. All right, 49ers, now you're not going to make it. All right, Vikings,
so.
You know what I mean, right? So I mean, like,
no,
that's
Vikings are going to make it.
Vikings are going to be, yeah, unless something like drastic happens,
unless
and they lose
catastrophic, they'd have to lose out basically.
A couple,
they have 9 wins.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they'd have to lose a few for sure. But you know, if the Vikings are still within shot of the division, like, my goodness, you could be talking about this being a really high a really important game. And so
for the one seed,
yeah, crazy, right? So tough games. You know, the easy part of their schedule is done, and they took care of business like they were expected to. You know, like you when you looked at the schedule, you looked at the Titans as being like a game you should win, and they won it handily. And then you're like, all right, you got to get tough games against Packers and Texans. You win those. And then Jaguars, Colts, Bears, that's the next easy part of your schedule. And that's, you know, you got to close it out. You got to win this game and then refocus. And then hopefully you get a couple guys back from that are injured. And then you get, and you start building on that from there, and ideally you're looking at a couple IR guys starting to come back in that last month as well. So a lot of potential still to go, a lot of six football games left, you know what I mean? It'll be past us in a blink, Joe. We're gonna turn around and be like, oh my gosh, we were just talking about Thanksgiving,
right?
But yeah, it's going to be a fun ride, and I suggest people heed the advice you gave earlier and watch every minute, enjoy every minute, because it's some rare stuff that they're doing right now.
Right. Yeah. Well put, Eric.
All right.
Do you have any more notes for this game on Thursday?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm going to put everything I have into one more article, you know, and like I normally do, I do my little Honolulu blueprint, but that's it.
Worth noting to everybody listening that you'll be at the Magic Stick down in Detroit Wednesday, December 4th. Doors open at 6:30. Price $15. So very economical. You want to see Eric and the Pride of Detroit fellas.
Yeah, we're doing a live podcast at the Majestic Theater the night before the Packers game, the December 4th. It's a 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock show, which will be right about when I reach my breaking point of energy. Right. I will.
Because, when you're up on that stage, you'll have plenty. It's not like that would be great, yeah. Though. Good for the show, though, if you like passed out like, on stage. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But, you know, and hopefully it's from tiredness, not from some sort of, you know, event, an anxiety event or,
I'm not.
Heat stroke from the lamps.
No, but these schedules getting ready for the Bears game, it's just crunched. And then it's going to be, you know, Jeremy's got the marathon on Saturday, and then it's going to be a crunch schedule again. And then it's all going to lead up into this live podcast right before another Thursday night game. And I'm worried I'm going to be on fumes at that point. But yeah, I think you're right. Once the lights turn on, and you know, my ego will build. And
you will have a swollen ego, so that'll keep you aloft. You know,
yeah, I fully expect it.
If an ego is made of helium, it'll keep you, you know, keep you upright.
Yeah. No, thanks for pointing that out. It keeps slipping my mind.
You guys got to sell out that event. That'll be pretty cool.
It is. It's certainly something that I think I'm purposely not thinking about too hard, because I don't want it to give myself anxiety. Thinking about, you know, doing live show in front of an audience. You know what I mean?
Sorry, I brought that word up. I shouldn't have. Like,
no,
I know it's, you know, for a lot of people that sucks, you know, getting up on stage and, you know, just being up there and doing that thing, right? That's the old Seinfeld joke, right? You'd rather be the one in the casket than doing the eulogy. But it's people are there that they want to see you. It's not like people are going to go there and be, you know, heckling you. So it's, you know, it's not so bad.
You know, we've done 300. This is show 324 for us. Mm-hmm. 324 of these shows. And then I've done, I don't know, not quite as many as that over at Pride of Detroit. And you know, so you do 500 of these shows, you know, you don't get a lot of anxiety before you have to like talk into a mic. But I typically have my computer. I typically have like my spreadsheets to lean back on if I need them. And, you know, all those little OCD things that make me feel comfortable. But I don't think I'll have that on this stage though. So it will be a little different. Maybe I'll just bring my computer and just be like, I don't care.
I was going to say, you guys got to have a fact checker up there. You got to have somebody sitting up there with a laptop, like checking everything you guys say. Or you could at least ask me, like, what was that?
Yeah, it should be fun. The guys are still hashing out the game plan and everything, but you know, we have an idea of what we want to do and how we want to approach it. And, but the detail, we're still fine tuning the details over the next few days here. And, but it looks like it'll be a lot of fun.
All right. So everybody listening, think about checking that out if you're local. And that's it. We don't have much. Everybody's probably stopped listening by now. So we appreciate everybody that's held on to this point. Everybody have a happy Thanksgiving out there. And until next time, let's go Lions.